Welcome to my back to school special series, where I've got something for all the ages and stages, from starting kindergarten to transitioning from middle to high school. I'll be sharing tips, tools, and strategies, as well as speaking with some special guest experts to support you as we prepare to head to school. Hello and welcome. I'm Tara, the founder of Raising Resilient Children, where I support parents and educators with tools and skills for feelings, kindness, and everyday mental well-being, also known as social emotional skills and empathy. As a longtime educator, former preschool owner, and parent, I know that there is no cookie cutter approach to raising children, and information can be overwhelming. Let's tackle some of this by having some important conversations and digging into some different topics. All right. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Natalie, who is a 16-year veteran of teaching. The last 9 years she spent in kindergarten. And today, our topic is, how do we get ready for kindergarten? A lot of kids are coming out of daycares and preschools, moving into the kindergarten space. There is an overwhelming amount of information out there on what parents are told their kids need to be ready for kindergarten. So I thought it'd be great to actually talk to somebody who's been living that life for the past 9 years on what do kids actually need and what does that look like and how can we support them with their needs? And a big hint is it's not pencils and things like that. So Natalie, we sort of have a couple of topics that we're going to address here. What do you think one of the most important things moving into the kindergarten space that kids need?
It needs to be able to do on their own.
Okay.
Right. The big fancy school word we'll say might be independence, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to actually, and I think about the first days and the first weeks and occasionally the first month of school, they need to be actually able to enter the building on their own.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Right. Because that's dramatic. Right?
It is hard.
And it's very different if they've been at daycare or if they've been at an in-home daycare, childminding, whatever.
Yeah.
It's different than holding mom or dad's hand into the space because that doesn't happen at school.
Right. It's very much a goodbye. Actually, I have a course on this, which is called The Art of Saying Goodbye. And it's designed with my preschool brain in mind and the transition and preparing kids for almost 7.5 years of the transition from preschool to kindergarten. And this idea of like, how do we foster a connected, but ultimately a goodbye where we can let our kids go and start their day. And not be late for work. I'm going to be honest. There's a piece of my course that's about that.
that's the parent side, right? Like the kid side receiving the 3 or 4 freshly 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Yes, you are safe here. I'm nice. I promise. You've met maybe once for half an hour.
Yes. Right? What's that whole like trust, right? And how do we build that, right? On our side as parents, we have to build that we're transferring our trust from us to that other caring adult, right? And help them understand that their teacher is somebody they can trust and is somebody they can go to. And in most classrooms, at least in Ontario where I am, there's also a second, an ECE in the classrooms. Not always the case, but sort of giving them the idea that that person is somebody that they can connect with and that you trust them, right? That you put their faith in them. And I call kids emotional radars. They feed off our energy and you can't fake it to make it. A lot of people are like, fake it to make it. When it comes to your emotional status, you actually can't. It's actually better to own your feelings because change is hard. Transitions are hard. It was something I talked about in the high school transition podcast, actually, that concept, that's a lifelong process, the ability to adapt to change, right? So in terms of independence, it starts with we got to go to school. Mm-hmm. And what happens? I mean, we were just talking about numbers, right? So we're talking about classrooms that are somewhere between 22 and 30.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, yeah.
With one or two adults. So independence is a really important concept.
Right.
So what kinds of things do they need to do?
Coming into the building. So I'm just walking through the day, actually coming into the building on their own, taking off shoes because you're going to have indoor and outdoor shoes.
Right.
Taking off shoes. That's a thing.
Right? Yes. Which means you got to practice it.
right?
Right. It's a skill.
Way easier for parents to do in 7 seconds. Let the child have 7 minutes to do it.
Yes. Yes. When you're building this skill, put in extra time in your day, mm-hmm. right? You're going to have to help. Like, this is going to be coming out in August, the beginning of August. If you're starting school in September, start as soon as you hear this podcast. Absolutely. It's going to take you the next 4 weeks to have your child be able to independently put on their shoes and take off their shoes. And you got to do it in stages.
Yeah.
And make sure your shoes are labeled. Why is that important? Why does it matter that stuff is labeled?
Well, we were just talking about in wintertime, looking at, there was, and I remember there was a size 9, a size 10, a size 11, and a size 12 of the exact same Spider-Man boot. Right. And none of them had names in them, but we were lucky enough that they were all different sizes that we knew this was 1, 2, 3, and 4 kids.
Right. But that's not independent, right?
No.
The fact that an adult has to go check the shoe size is not independent. So make sure it's labeled with some stickers or however you want to label them, and in a way that your child recognizes, right? The monkey sticker is my shoe. So I'm the monkey Spider-Man boot. That's me. So I can find it in the mass of however many shoes are lined up. Okay. So we get there.
Shoes off. And then indoor shoes on, which is a whole separate thing.
Yes. Right? Label.
Closely linked, but very, not so much for literacy, but very much for independence and a solid sense of belonging, is for your child to be able to recognize their name.
Right.
Right. Because then I know that's my hook. There's 28 empty hooks, but that one has my name.
Right. And if you're struggling, like if you have a child who is not there yet, start with getting them to recognize the first letter of their name. So if your child is not at all able to recognize sort of a full word at this point, start with the letter, right? And build the name out. But you'd be surprised. You can do activities with chalk on the sidewalk. You can point out things. If you're getting stickers for your belongings, that's a great way to start name recognition. So again, this is a skill that's going to take you the entire month of August if they don't already have it. So I love this. Shoes off, shoes on, find our cubby based on our names.
Or however the teacher organizes it, right?
Right.
It might be...
Yeah, they might have a spot. They must have some kind of indicator typically.
Right, right. Independence in changing their clothes, because inevitably there's going to be some change. If it's not a bathroom accident, it's going to be mud or rain.
Paint.
Or they don't like the Play-Doh splash or whatever it is, right? So to be able to take off an article of clothing and put on an article of clothing.
Right.
So belts are probably not necessary.
Yeah, the easier, the better. So I think a lot of people wait till the end of the summer to buy their kids clothes. I always told my preschool clients, get the clothes they're going to wear for school in the summer, start practicing what they're going to wear at school right now, right? And again, if your child's new to this skill, first start with the first layer of clothing, right? I'll give you an example. Put the head over the shirt and then they do the arms. Mm-hmm. Then they learn how to put the head, right? You put their feet in the hole, they pull up. Then they figure out where to put their feet in the hole, right? So think of dressing as stages. If you haven't done this at all yet, and I think an important part of this conversation is they don't have help, right?
Well,
yeah.
There's been a lot of coaching from the bathroom door.
Yes.
Right?
But you actually can't go in.
No.
Right. I think there's a lot of misinformation about that. Teachers cannot actually go into washrooms. It is against their contracts and there's legality around that. So one of the things is there's coaching, but you can't actually physically help them do stuff. No. ECEs have slightly different rules and regulations.
Depending.
But so one of the things that is very different than daycare and preschool is it's not hands-on. Right. So the coaching is all verbal, which I think is a great connection to another piece of getting ready for kindergarten.
Yeah.
And what is that? That's how do we speak and advocate, right?
Can your child actually talk, right? Can they say, hey, I need to go change my clothes.
Right.
And depending how the classroom is organized, their clothes might be in their cubby. They might be in their backpack. They might be in a separate place altogether. I need to go to the bathroom depending on if it's not too late.
Yes.
Right. Like this is a biological, we're there for 7 hours a day.
Yes.
We are going to need to use the washroom.
Right.
Right. But for the child to say like, and be comfortable enough to say, I need
this thing
to go, whatever,
right.
I need a drink. Can you help me get my backpack off the hook?
Right.
Whatever. Cause we can't do that.
And parents spending August saying, and helping, you know, when you need to use the washroom, you need to tell me. And when you're in school, you're going to say, teacher, I need to, like, you need to model the language mm-hmm. that your child can use. And the teachers are all going to sort of tweak it, right? They all have their own systems. Some have hand gesture systems. There's different classrooms, but if you can help your child build some sort of base skills around what they need to do by getting them to do it. And it'll feel a bit weird. You're like, we're at home, like they just run to the washroom. It's, we need to help them because when there's people in line for the washroom, mm-hmm. we got that piece, right? And helping the adults, that will help the teachers get to know your child faster as well. If they can advocate for themselves, if you've created some basic skills. And one of the things about, I mean, the washroom specifically, this is something I always want to mention it because I know it's something that comes up in my work quite a bit is, being able to totally clean yourself is a really difficult skill, really hard. Wiping is not easy. So give your child some space and grace if there's some leftovers sometimes, because it's actually not them. It's their skill development, their gross fine motor development skills aren't always there, especially depending on how much they've been doing it. So I know it can be really upsetting for some parents to be like, you're dirty. Just keep in mind a little like tip there is that it's actually a skill that's really quite complex. So as you're doing this transition to kindergarten, mm-hmm. remember that in preschool daycare, someone probably did an after wipe, a little helpful wipe. Mm-hmm. And in kindergarten, they can't.
Right. Another piece for that is the actual physical space. So families can and should look in the washroom in their child's classroom.
Okay.
At every single school, the kindergarten washrooms, the actual toilet is adult size.
Oh, okay.
With this slit. So these little bodies are balancing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Which they would do at home. Right. So
at home, but it's different, right? Like the classroom that I have has the slit at the front.
Okay.
So
I used to have this cool step. It was really cool. Right. And if you can't go into the school, because I know that some leftover COVID rules are that you can't go, just ask your teacher, hey, do you have the little people size ones or do you have the adult size? What does that look like to help your kid transition?
Because then again, same with using the same language, then you have the same actual vision of what's happening.
Right. Yeah. Which is so helpful, right? Kids need to know. They're not great with gray. They're not great with abstract thinking. So the more concrete you can be in helping that transition feel predictable, that's where you're going to get some great sort of helpful tips for your child. So in the zone of speaking, what other things? We need to be able to talk about washroom needs. What else?
Be able to talk about what I need. And you know what? When I'm sad and I'm crying as a little person, I need to be able to say, I'm hungry.
Right.
We didn't have breakfast this morning. Mummy was in a race.
Right.
Right. I didn't get my last hug at the door, whatever.
Right. It was. Whatever it is.
Because that will clue in the daytime grownups to where the headspace and heart space is.
Right.
Little person. Right. Talking that way about what I need and my feelings. This year in particular, we had a little one who really was showing the effects of the last few years.
Right.
She would parallel play.
I've heard this a lot from my KG friends is that this year was a different year.
Because these, especially the year one kinders, they were coming from mummy and living room mm-hmm. and that's it.
Right.
So this little one in particular, and my heart broke for her. She could not, she didn't have the words to say, can I play?
Yes, the language of play, right.
Right. It's just that entry into socializing. She would play right beside doing the exact same thing, but never actually together.
Right. Which is something for parents, what we're talking about is something that I used to see in preschool. So part of my job as a preschool teacher was watching and helping facilitate that transition from what we call parallel play. That's where kids play beside each other, to interactive play. And that's where kids start to play together. And by kindergarten, although truthfully, some of the three-year-olds aren't there yet, yeah, even in kindergarten, yeah, but by kindergarten, kids are starting to interact with each other.
And you know what? Some of the six-year-olds leaving kindergarten still aren't there yet.
It's true. 100% true. It's interesting. And this is something I actually talk about in my course, is this idea of like how kids operate and where they are is such a spectrum of learning and trajectories. And the language of play is something that we have to sometimes help facilitate, yep, right? Is this idea of like, this is an example from my course. I talk about like kids who grab shovels. They're not ill intent. They're not grabbing a shovel to be a jerk. That's not actually what's happening. They see the shovel, they think the shovel is awesome and they want it. So they take it. They don't have the impulse control to not take it in certain cases. Some kids do. I'm talking about the spectrum here, but they also aren't doing it to be mean. They're not thinking, hey, this is going to make my friends upset.
No.
And in that, I have something called parent clues. And here's your parent clue for that. My parent clue is my child doesn't have the language of play. They don't know how to ask for the toy. They don't know how to give and take with the toy. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things you're talking about here is, you know, spend some time this summer making sure that your child has a few bits of language to support play. Is that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm just kind of like daydreaming as you're saying this. I'm like, yeah, because the school words we use are think alouds, right?
Right.
As a parent, there's nothing wrong with monologuing your day.
Yeah. I call it narration.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I call it.
Yeah.
Narration. And this is a tool I use for feelings. So, you know, this, our last topic is self-regulation, which is a big topic,
yeah,
but this is where I use narration. So we as adults are constantly going a mile a minute inside our brains, right? Our inner voice is going on a super fast trajectory. And we assume, even with people like in our lives, that sort of people can mind read us. And when it comes to feelings, that's the one that we don't talk a lot about. So one of the things I talk about is, how do we use narration to help kids understand what we're feeling through different things? Like, normally we might in our head be like, oh, this is so frustrating, I'm so angry. We would never say that out loud, right? The package was late. Where narration can actually help your pre-K kids, mm-hmm, with understanding how frustrating you feel when the package was like late, right? Oh man, I feel so frustrated that this package was delivered late. I really needed it by 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I think I need to do some deep breathing. So that's the part two. I'm narrating the feelings so that they know that we experience a range of feelings. And then the part two is, I'm showing you I need a tool for my feelings.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So you guys, what do you guys call it? I call it a narration. You call it?
Oh, think aloud.
Think aloud. Okay. Yeah. Take your inner voice out.
And then it keeps, and then exactly as you say, you go, buddy, calm. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But kids don't know that process.
Yeah.
Right. And we assume they do. The interesting thing about self-regulation and sort of, and this is the sphere that I've been spending my time in. And I've known Natalie, we actually did our master's together. So I've known Natalie a long time.
Even before
and
that.
It's true. We went to high school together. I just forgot about that. But one of the things that I looked at in my master's was the importance of social emotional intelligence. Now, at the time, it wasn't called that. That's sort of new rage, right? But I looked at, how do we use literacy to address empathy and bullying, right? So how do we help kids understand each other? And since doing that, what I've learned about emotions and things like that is, kids don't have a great, adults do, don't have a great understanding of feelings. And it's almost impossible to regulate if you don't know what feeling that you need, yep, to regulate with. So
can identify, yeah.
You shared with me before we hopped on here that one of the big goals of kindergarten is self-regulation. What does, yeah, that mean?
Absolutely. So if we think about, and I'll use like an old term, a temper tantrum. If we think about a kid having a meltdown, a freak out, right, and we think about an adult having those same emotions,
yeah,
what we actually physically see and hear is totally different.
Right.
So self-regulation. And there's so many parts, and it's such a big thing for kindergarten. And now I think it's coming out with the kind of growth mindset and permissions and mental yeah. health emphasis lately. I think it's coming out to the general population is the idea that I feel this way.
Yeah.
Or I can see body clues.
Yes.
From this other person.
Yeah.
So I am now going to adjust what I am doing.
Right.
So to kind of diffuse and bring everybody back to green for go.
Right. I call that, so what I like temper tantrum meltdown. Mm-hmm. I call that the reactions to those unwanted behaviors. Right. So the things that we don't necessarily want to see, hitting, punching, kicking, screaming. Right. And then I say, so if we have that as an outlet, kids and adults, everybody, we actually need to do something with those feelings. Right. So if we're not allowed to kick, hit, scream, whatever we're doing, what are we allowed to do? And those are tools for our feelings. Right. So if we start to see what the clues are in our body, and understand that other people have feelings too. And maybe they're not the same as my feelings, but we also start to learn that, hey, when I have this angry feeling and I'm at school, I need to make lemonade, right? Where I squeeze yeah. my hands and I release, squeeze mm-hmm. my hands and release. This is a journey, right? So this topic isn't going to happen before September.
No,
like, no, but
it might not even happen by your 50th birthday.
Yeah. This is a journey. Social emotional learning is a journey. And as I just mentioned, like, it's only really been a hot topic for 8 years. I joke that my master's is like, I was talking about feelings before it was cool. I didn't know, what it was going to become. And I think it's super cool that that's where we've come to. But I also know that part of this journey is we come from a world where feelings were meant to be suppressed. Right? You are stronger for your ability to suppress them. Mm-hmm. Now it's been prioritized in education. It's been prioritized in parenting. Hey, we got to do things differently. We can't do things punitively. We can't do things disciplined, right? We got to do things differently. Here's the thing that I think is missing from this whole little puzzle. Where did adults get the skills? Where did they build the skills? Mm-hmm. Right? They don't. So don't feel bad if you're like, oh my goodness, this is overwhelming. No. It is one of the things that I talk so much about in my work, because this is my sphere, is sort of how do we build social emotional intelligence? How do we build self-regulation? How do we, you know, foster kindness, those kinds of things. But the thing I like to reassure parents is one of the reasons that this particular topic is so difficult is because you didn't grow up with skills. Right. You weren't taught them. You were taught to suppress them. So the idea of a tool for a feeling, being able to identify your feeling, do something with your feeling, that's a skill building process. And I like to compare it to swimming, right?
Yeah.
So when you're swimming, can you get across the pool safely as a child? Not without adult assistance, mm-hmm. right? We can't manage our feelings without some assistance.
Yeah.
Do you need swimming lessons to get across the pool? Well, maybe.
More than likely.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, if you have lessons and you practice,
yeah.
you could swim lengths, right? So mm-hmm. it's this skill building process. And the pool is an example of like, there's some serious risk involved. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to swim and you're in water, there's some danger there. So I like to compare that to emotions, because it's like, sure, can you doggy paddle your way through? Absolutely. Is that going to be helpful, beneficial, and support you through your life journey? You're doggy paddling. So no, not really. Right. So
you're working really hard.
Yeah. So it's doable, but it's not safe, right? Mm-hmm. It's not supportive. So that's sort of one of the things I like to talk about in terms of self-regulation. So entering KG.
Yeah.
What would you expect, hope for? What's something that parents can work on? So we've talked about some things they need to do for independence, getting dressed, yeah. putting their shoes on. I'm also going to add in there, if you haven't got your lunchbox yet, please get it.
Please get it.
Use yeah. it every day. It. The packages that you yeah. want kids to be able to open, the drink boxes you want them to put the straws in, do all and that.
The thing, right? Like open the cheese string until just a corner of the cheese is open.
Right.
Those are tricky.
They are. They're right? tricky for me.
open the bear paws or the whatever package, yeah. the made goods, whatever.
Yeah.
Open it until there's just the crack of air gone.
Right.
Because then they can rip it the rest of the way.
They do it themselves. So make sure you're getting the things that they need to do, and assume, I'm not saying this is always going to be the case, but assume that an adult can't help them. If an adult can help them, great, and it works out. But assume that's not the option, and that you're building skills so that your children can do it independently. So we got lunch, and then coats, zippers,
yeah,
things like that.
Zippy, yeah.
And then we talked about speaking your needs, making sure we practice washroom, asking for washrooms, showing that transfer of responsibility and trust relationship. Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of self-regulation, what could they work on this summer?
Well, see, and I think that has to do, that loops in very tightly with speaking. I feel angry. Right. I feel sad. So that when the classroom grown up comes and says, I see angry eyes. And
yeah. As I have on my desk, a brand new anger book, When I See Red. Have you seen this book?
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
If you can see my desk right now, podcast people, like I have stacks of picture books beside me all about feelings.
Because feelings are important.
Yes.
No, but like when the grown-up comes and says, I see angry eyes, I see two friends who are not. And I'm like vocalizing. I'm vocalizing what I
right.
see. I see these body clues. I see these friends.
Right.
Not saying unkind words.
Right.
The children, the students, the children, the precious littles, because yes, they are.
They're just excited. Adorable. Yes.
need to be able to say, yes, I feel angry, and actually say,
yeah,
what is actually happening. And this right. is why like self-reg is like a lifelong journey, right?
For sure.
Because they need to say what is actually happening, right? We've got your feelings. You're upset. You're yeah. sad because
it's obvious. Those are obvious, right?
Right. So the grown-up will hopefully, and this was always my, and this is always, is not, is and was always my approach, was to say, okay, what's actually happening here? I had the My Little Pony. You made the mountain, and then you, child two, took the pony to go up the mountain.
Right.
And child one is sad because they don't have the pony anymore. Okay, well, right. let's pause right there.
Right.
And child one, what would you like to have happened? Child two, what? But they need to be able to say that.
Right.
Without crying and being beyond, without being beyond words, with like saying right. the action, how they're going to move through it.
Right. And that's the language of play. I'm hearing a lot about that's like the language of play and then being able to facilitate or build. Now, if your child doesn't know how to speak their emotions, mm-hmm. they won't be able to by September. No. No. This is a journey to start. And I think sort of the piece I can add here is this is where your narration is so important. And also in the show notes, I will put my top favorite books for starting to build this. So I find there's two great ways to build the sort of language of emotions, I call it. One way is by narration. So we need to speak more about our inner voice out. And that's the example that you just said. I see these angry eyes, right? We as adults, if the more we can model what different feelings look like, the more helpful it is for children to be like, oh, excited, mad, frustrated, you know, sad, scared, right? They're starting to build those out. And in the beginning, they only have the basics, mad, sad, happy, scared, yeah. right? And happy is the epitome of our culture. And I'm trying to change it to calm, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But we think everything is based on happiness. So that's where kids start in their social emotional intelligence. And we have to help them build out the layers. So one way we do that is narration. Another great way is that we get books. Mm-hmm. And why books are so effective is they have a visual. Kids are visual. Right? They're yeah. not great with abstract, right? We can have lots of conversations and things that are happening in the moment. But if we can help build out their feelings, words, you know, through some great books, The Way I Feel, Jan and Kane is one of my absolute favorite books. But there's a whole bunch that I'll throw in the show notes. So yeah. grab a couple from the library. You don't have to buy them. Go grab them from the library
no.
and read them with your child to start building that relationship around, oh, at breakfast this morning when we didn't have XYZ cereal, you had some feelings. They were like, yeah, I had disappointed feelings, mm-hmm. right? Getting them to start to associate what they are thinking, what they're feeling.
So, and doing that in a safe space, right? About breakfast. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Car ride to the grocery store. They didn't get to pass
right.
Their favorite place because you took a different route.
Right. Because the original reaction is probably crying, yelling frustration, right? That's the go-to for uncomfortable feelings until we build language and tools for it, is that. And I think what I'm hearing you say is, when I have a room full of kids and I'm trying to problem solve with them, if everybody's crying, I can't problem solve. So I need them to know that when they have disappointed feelings, I'm really, you know, frustrated that the person climbed the mountain without me.
Yeah.
Is, the pony. Is part of the journey. The pony. Sorry, the little pony. My apologies. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Before we finish off here, is there any sort of last thoughts you have, or like, let's get ready for kindergarten.
Get ready. Well, see, and the other thing I was thinking about this. I'm like, yes, please practice doing the things by yourself with support. Absolutely. It should be easy. Not, okay, you're going to school. This is happening.
Yeah. No, you have to do it slowly. Take the whole month of August, slowly build that. Yeah.
Have a picnic lunch on Saturday.
Right.
Sit at the table with your
lunchbox. Make it fun.
However it is organized.
Yes. Right? Yes. Good point.
But the other thing I really wanted, it's so, so important. And I always, as a kindergarten teacher, my favorite, and I do realize that I'm lucky enough, my board still does staggered entry.
Okay.
Where we have individual meetings and then they come in with five other families and then they start. So we don't actually have the whole class together until the second week of school.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Because that's important time. And if you have the luxury of spending that time, go, please go.
Yes.
Because that's where you start to make the teamwork between the connection between school and home.
Right.
Your teacher can say, and you can go in and see the washroom and you can go and talk about the hook and who's right beside you and where your lineup spot is. And ask the teacher, what social emotional programs do I need to know about? Right.
Right.
Because me personally, I have seven programs that run throughout the 10 months of the year.
Right.
Because they kind of loop into each other and they build on each other and the kids, and we have a smooth classroom. But go, be that team. Be that team.
Right. Be part of the team.
So that home knows what's happening at school and school knows what's happening at home. So that you can, if there's a possibility, you can use the actual same word.
Yeah.
So the kid isn't guessing, well, mommy says it's maroon and teacher says it's burgundy. Well, come on.
Right.
It's dark red.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard. And I think if you can't support that, because I had that in my preschool, I had the parents who could do the transition and the parents who couldn't, right, worked and give them. But there was always a way to communicate that. Hey, I want to be a part, like reach out to the teacher. Hey, I wasn't able to be there for that process, but I still really want to help support you with some of the language that you use. I'd like to use it with some of the, right? And a teacher who gets a message that's like, hey, we're on the same team and we're working together. In most cases is going to be like, yeah, here's the big things in my classroom that this is how we communicate wash and break. So if you want to, you know, reflect that at home, that would be great. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that came up in my group last week is like a lot of people are trying to get play dates together.
Right.
And one of the things that I was saying is kids just make friends wherever they go. High school is a different story. And that was one of the different conversations in my podcast was like, that's where the big shift of transitions, but kids going into JK, they may or may not find, or sort of it's, that's more for the adults, the little preschool, meaning before school starts, meetups are more about the adults connecting with each other, because the kids, once they get into that zone, it's like, they're in that space. They don't think about relationships the same way we do. They're like more like, what's this place going to be like? How does it work? What's the caring adult doing? That's how they're thinking. That shifts as we go through the grades. It becomes more about who am I going to meet? Which friends are in my class? All that kind of thing. But that's not a KG mindset. KG is like,
oh, you're here.
And I'm really wondering what the routines are going to be like, they're more in a different headspace.
What do I need to do?
Yeah. So if you're, you know, worried about making connections for that reason, because I know a lot of people are like, I can't make that work. And they feel really like disappointed and stressed. And I'm like, don't worry. If you can't make that work, that's a great adult connection piece. But really for the kids, reinforcing some of these things that we've been talking about, independence and having a little bit of advocacy voice, focusing on a couple sentences, you know, beginning to build our feelings tools, go there, because that's what's going to serve them best when they get
there. Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. And I'm hoping everybody finds it helpful. If you have questions, you can always reach out to info@taragrado.ca. And I'm happy to support that. Thank you for joining me, Natalie.
Oh, that's awesome.
Want to start the school year with confidence, connection, and still get to work on time? Enroll in my mini course, The Art of Saying Goodbye, where I'll help you learn how to say goodbye with confidence, tackle the one mores, one more hug, one more kiss, one more minute, and help you know what to do when everything's going well until it doesn't. As a former preschool owner and longtime educator, I created this mini course to support parents who want to walk away from drop-off feeling less conflicted, knowing that their child's bucket is full and that they are ready for the day. In The Art of Saying Goodbye, you will learn how to build a customized goodbye routine, how to gather parent clues to handle the one mores, and the importance of developing an understanding of goodbye with your child. If you feel like you're never going to be able to do drop-off without challenges or tears, this is the course for you. Head to taragrado.ca/goodbye to enroll today and get ready for a great start to your school year.